Welcome back, Nod Pod. Thank you guys so much for joining me for part two of my interview with Mary Tilson. She is the founder of the online community, the online sober community, Sun and Moon Sober Living. And you guys loved part one. There was so much to take away from that. And I know that you're going to love part two. So part two is really interesting. She was in Bali. She was overseas in Southeast Asia for almost a decade and makes the decision to return to the United States. We talk about what that looks like, what that assimilation looks like to leave this idyllic space, this idyllic environment that's like really conducive to being sober and focusing on mental health and physical wellness and mental wellness and meditation, and coming back to America where the culture is definitely focused on beer and drinking. And that's a huge part of what we do socially, and what that looked like for her to come back, assimilate back into American culture and life while still tending to her recovery. And so we talk about exactly how she did that. And I think my favorite thing about Mary in general, and this seemed to be y'all's favorite thing too, we talk about this more today, is the way that she so eloquently describes the relationship between fitness, movement, and recovery, and fitness and sobriety, and how those two things really just have such like a symbiotic relationship. Symbiotic, is that the word? That's the word, right, guys? Tell me if I'm wrong. Symbiotic means it helps each other. A relationship where the two things help each other, right? If one is strengthened, the other is strengthened. If one is strengthened, the other is strengthened. There's that reciprocal relationship there. And I've always thought that as well. And I love the way that she puts words to that concept as well. I feel like it's inspiring. It makes you want to get involved. And we talk about how she recommends starting that journey, because so many of you guys reached out to me and you're like, look, I get it. We should be working out. If we're in recovery, it would help. But like, I don't know where to get started. I'm not like a fitness person. And so she talks exactly about like how she would recommend doing that. Okay, guys. Also, we have a Nod Pod shout out of the week this week. This one is amazing. Also, if I'm not sure if you're okay with me saying your name, I'm always going to keep y'all's anonymity. So if you ever DM me and you're okay with me saying your name, just say that. So this is a DM from Instagram. Listening to your conversation, and this is in reference to Khalil's episode. If you guys didn't watch that one yet or listen to that one yet, definitely go back and catch Khalil's episode. One of my personal favorites. Listening to your conversation feels like home with this massive gift of hope. I'm from and in Switzerland. I've been to 12-step meetings in many countries, but never have I met souls like yours, so resilient and alive. I'm starting my business, and it feels so good to hear that it's okay to have been through hell and to try to make out of my life something really worth living, that I'm not a fraud for wanting to create something that does make a difference, that I am really strong to have been through massive shit and to be and have been a good mother despite the problems all along. I'm not my past. I am the strength that took to overcome it. This episode helped me so much. Thank you. And then she wrote, but I'm gonna butcher this with my accent. It's just merci, merci. It's French for thank you. Merci. I'm super bad at accents, you guys. I took many years of Spanish. I took AP Spanish, and my Spanish accent is not good. But anyways, merci. That's how you say it, right? Merci. Okay, Nod Pod. Thank you so much. I love getting your DMs. Let me know your feedback on this one too, and we'll see you next week. Okay, so you were there for a long time. You were there for 8 years planning retreats. How did you nurture your recovery while you were overseas traveling? This is a really dumb question that I kind of know the answer to. There are meetings overseas, right?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So it's actually been pretty incredible to realize that, I mean, AA in particular, it literally extends all across the globe. Like just recently, you know, I was in Kenya and I met someone who regularly goes to meetings in a really remote part of the country, which was just great to hear because it's so widely accessible. So there definitely were meetings available. I mentioned I was living at a retreat center in Cambodia. So I didn't really have much access when I was there. That was in 2014, 2015. But places where, you know, especially places that have become more like international hubs, like in Bali, for example, I know there's plenty of meetings available. So that was definitely accessible in terms of, you know, 12-step recovery meetings. But for me, I spoke about how I was living in a retreat center. I really found a lot of the recovery that I was doing was centered around living a lifestyle centered around yogic principles, which are very much in line with the 12 steps and other recovery programs. In fact, if you trace it back, like especially the spiritual roots are pretty similar. But I will say that I did get to a point, and I think I mentioned this last time we spoke, where I realized like there was a real need to not just connect with people who were, you know, on a path of yoga, but also who really understood it from the perspective of addiction. And so I started to kind of plug into online communities around that time. And that's where I was kind of starting to reconnect in that way. And then also doing training. So at one point, you know, I flew back to the States and I did a training with my teacher, Nikki Myers, or one of my teachers. She's the founder of Yoga of 12-Step Recovery. And so just doing things like that had been really helpful during that time.
Wow, that's so cool. And you were able to find meetings in English, obviously?
There were, yeah. I wasn't, when I was in Southeast Asia, I wasn't attending them, okay. But I know that they're there okay. And they're available. Okay. Yeah.
Wow. So you were there when COVID hit.
I was.
Where
yeah.
were you so when that happened? Like what country?
At the time it started reaching the news, I was actually getting ready to fly to South Africa because I had a retreat planned and some travel. And, you know, I was about to put down a deposit for a retreat that I was going to run in Malaysia. Right as I started to see, I was sitting at the airport and I saw them starting to talk about COVID. And I was thinking, you know, maybe people are going to be hesitant to travel. Maybe I should hold off on putting this deposit down. Little did I know this was going to be a 2-year thing.
Holy
but shit. I remember, yeah, I was traveling in South Africa. When our plane landed, they were taking temperatures. And I was like, wow, they are really intense here about, you know, the security and health protocols. But then, of course, it just escalated. And so by the time that trip ended and I landed back in Indonesia, which was my base at that time, the borders shut down. And then I was there. I was in Bali on a lockdown for pretty much the whole pandemic.
Oh, shit. They didn't let anybody into Bali?
You could stay. So if you had a working visa there and you were sponsored by an Indonesian company, then you could stay. And people who were there on tourist visas who weren't able to leave before the lockdown happened could stay. Like normally there's a limited amount of time for a visa. They just kept extending it. But yeah, they were really not allowing like tourism to come in and out for a long
time. So if you were there on a honeymoon, now you live there for 2 years? That's crazy.
If you chose to, they give you a warning. Okay. So they literally were like, everyone, you know, we are going to be closing the borders. You have this amount of time to evacuate. But I definitely did meet people that were like, well, if everyone's going into lockdown, I'm going to stay here. So a lot of people made a decision during that time to stay, which was really interesting.
Plus, we were told 2 weeks to flatten the curve, right? And so everyone thought a few weeks. No one thought a few years. You know, yeah. I mean, obviously. So were you sponsored by an Indonesian company? Did you fall under that category or a tourist visa that they extended? So if you couldn't do travel retreats, what did you do instead during that time?
So I was working remotely. I always have been.
Okay.
So I do some digital marketing consulting online
you do.
For travel companies.
Okay.
And I also, and I was doing some online teaching too and connecting with people that way.
Okay. So what made you decide you wanted to come back to the States after 8 years?
As I said, I mean, I never anticipated on being on living full time in Bali. Okay. So before COVID happened, I was traveling pretty much full time. I was guest teaching at properties or I was leading retreats. And I think just having that opportunity to pause just had me start to rethink a lot. I wanted to be closer to my family back in the States. And I just kind of felt like, and this is how it's been for me over the last, you know, through that whole time of travel, I just started to get this feeling like, okay, the time is up, you know, like after I'd been at that retreat center in Cambodia, I just started to sense like, okay, you know, and so after so many years of travel, it was an absolute dream to be able to do that. And at the same time, it was starting to get really exhausting. And so I was starting to just crave some grounding and kind of more of a routine and being closer to my family because being in Southeast Asia, it's pretty far from the States, not only in terms of location, but also just trying to connect over the phone. I mean, it's literally the opposite in terms of time zone. They're going to sleep when I'm waking up. So yeah, and I also, during that time, so towards the end of the time I was living in Bali was when I first started Sun and Moon Sober Living, which is an online community and doing group coaching and doing the podcast. And even though so much of that was happening online, again, because of the time difference, I was like, I want to be able to connect with people more. And so I just felt so removed. So it was a natural fit to come back. The time had come to an end.
So when you came back, are you back in Colorado?
Yes, I live in Golden, Colorado.
Okay, so you moved back to Colorado. So what was the transition like when you came back? What were like the biggest differences from living in Southeast Asia and living here? And what would you say were the biggest like challenges to that reassimilation, if any?
I'm glad you asked that because it gave me such a different perspective of what people are up against when it comes to getting sober. So I was living in Bali, which, you know, a lot of people there, first of all, the Balinese people are incredible and they are just grounded in these incredible values and principles and very community centered. And, you know, a lot of the people that are drawn to living there are people who are focused on, you know, wellness and connecting with nature and, you know, all of these things. And so for me, you know, it's one thing to be living at a retreat center or living on the island of Bali and encouraging people to, you know, take on some of these lifestyle practices and screaming the benefits of sobriety. But then moving back to Colorado, it gave me so much perspective because I'm like, okay, I haven't lived here in 13 years. I went to school here a while ago, but I haven't lived here in a long time, ready to meet some people. So I start doing the things, you know, I'm like looking on some of the Facebook groups and meetups and seeing what kind of events are available. And you just wouldn't believe how alcohol has made its way into pretty much every space. I could not believe I signed up for a health and wellness meetup. And I basically started getting an aggregated email of yoga at breweries, yoga and sake bombs. And so it was like giving me this really interesting perspective, which I was already aware of course, but you know, it's challenging. And you know, within the States, the normalization of drug use and alcohol and the way that infiltrates our social spaces, I think I had forgotten just how intense that is. And, you know, it's worked out fine. I've definitely been able to find my people and connect with people that are practicing yoga in an authentic way and maintaining the integrity of the practice and who have similar values. You know, all that being said, there's also incredible sober movements happening here in recovery groups and, you know, people who are meeting around other things. But I would say that was like the biggest thing that I was like, oh, wow, like I forgot how challenging this can be. I mean, do you have that experience?
Well, I mean, I haven't been sober and lived anywhere, right? I haven't lived overseas. I did actually, this is so random. I lived in the Philippines when I was a kid. My dad was in the Air Force. And so I lived in Southeast Asia and we went to like Singapore. And well, I guess that's not really considered. Is the Philippines considered the Southeast Asia? I know the TV was called the Far East Network. That was our TV show that there was one channel and it was called FEN, the Far East Network. Is that Southeast Asia? Now I sound like an idiot.
It is, yeah.
My editor is from the Philippines. Matt, I'm so sorry. Matt was going to hear this and be like, this bitch. So I've been there, but I was a kid, you know. But I do think that I was just thinking as you were saying that the cure for that for me or the treatment for that for me was, and I think this is probably what most people have to do at the level of like addiction I was at, I was completely ensconced in the recovery community. I only knew people that were sober but it didn't start that way. But after years of homelessness and rehabs, I only knew people that were using or in NA. And so anytime I got sober, I was surrounded by NA and the people of Narcotics Anonymous, which is in North County, San Diego, a really, really tight-knit, strong group. It's like very helpful for me. I was dating a dude in sobriety. Maybe that's why we were chatting about this. Like, it's always been my preference to date someone in recovery. Maybe that's why. And I never realized it because there is so much alcohol everywhere. And like, part of me thinks I certainly wouldn't care because if I'm out with friends and they drink, I don't care. But if what I think would happen is that if I were seeing someone that was drinking all the time, not all the time, but you know, like a regular person, I think I would probably start to think, look at me. I'm married to this dude. You know what I mean? Like we own a house or whatever. I could probably drink too. I think that would probably happen. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely, you know, the culture is very alcohol oriented, but I was on such the other side of civilization when in my early recovery, like I was the getting out of jail, parole programs. It was all focused around being sober. I actually think it would probably be harder for someone in your situation who is still very much like in the world as a marketing person. Do you know what I mean? Who just graduated from college and you have regular friends. I didn't even have that option. It was just like heroin addict school. That's where you go. And I was by the end, I was like, fine. Junkie school for me. I get it. But like, it's probably harder for you, which actually leads me to a question that I wanted to ask you. So your external circumstances were not that bad at that time. So what internal markers do you think were happening for you? If you could like specify a few, what do you think was happening for you that led you into sobriety? And then what would you recommend? Because we definitely have people that listen that their lives weren't completely a fucking dumpster fire like mine, you know? And so what would you say someone should kind of like look for if you're thinking, well, I still have a job, you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say dishonesty. Like I was being so dishonest with myself and my friends and my coworkers. And I didn't ever consider myself a dishonest person. In fact, I really took a lot of pride in the fact that I've always been a very loyal friend and someone that can be trusted and someone who can be counted on. And like, I don't even like to tell little white lies, you know, like little things that don't even matter. It's such a core value for me. And at the same time, like the bottoms that I've had along the way have always had to do with that dishonesty and acting in a way that's so out of alignment with that value. So, you know, for example, being out with a group of friends and going and sneaking into the bathroom and doing cocaine by yourself. I mean, you could say I didn't tell a lie, but I was presenting two very different versions of myself. And there was this huge disconnection, which was so painful. And even, you know, it was crazy because in work, I was moving up in my career. Like I was on a board of future digital leaders at my advertising agency, which is so crazy because I couldn't even feel like if I would get promoted or if I'd get put on one of these boards, like I couldn't even accept that as something that I deserved because I felt like I was living this lie. And I always had this feeling like you have no idea who I really am. And there was so much secrecy. So that to me was like, that was the most painful part of it. And the part that created a lot of shame and paranoia and anxiety and real like self-loathing.
Yeah. So there was a period of time then obviously it sounds like before you stop where internally you did not feel like, and I think this is probably an interesting concept, like how, because for me, this was probably immediate. Like when I first started doing cocaine, I felt out of alignment with my real purpose in the very, very beginning when I didn't even buy it. I remember like being in the shower and like praying to God and being like, I'm really sorry. Like I felt so bad. And I was like, God is going to be so mad at me. You know, like I felt that pretty quickly because my question was going to be, was there a shift from like, I'm just a party girl internally to this is not in alignment with me? Or did you ever actually feel like I'm just a party girl? It's all fun. Like, I wonder if anybody ever actually feels that way.
Yeah. At the beginning, I had no bad feelings about the fact that I was doing cocaine. I actively sought it out. Like I remember when we were talking, I thought it was great. I was like, I'm in college. This is what people are doing. I was excited about it. And it wasn't until that split started happening where I was like, because the first few times I was super social. It like brought out this very emboldened version of myself. I was, you know, as you know, the feeling. And then it was when I started blacking out and I started doing things that were incredibly out of character. That was when the split happened where I was like, okay, now I'm pretending like I really like this. I'm pretending I'm in control. I'm pretending I want to, you know, go out and just be the party girl. But internally, I'm starting to feel like there's a real issue here and I don't actually have control and I have no idea what's going to happen next.
I like that answer. I like that answer. That makes sense because I think, because I was just thinking while we were talking, like I often feel lately not in alignment in sobriety even. And I wonder what the clues would be in sobriety because I'm not necessarily being dishonest, but you seem like someone that's like really in alignment. What do you do to keep yourself intuitively aligned?
So I think the most important thing is having disciplined daily practices. So for me, it is an absolute non-negotiable. I need to have a practice of connecting with my body every single day, you know, movement, breathing, meditation of some form. And it doesn't have to be this long, blown out thing. I mean, it's great when I have time to do like all the different things, but some way of like really taking time to tune into myself. I think that's the most important thing to stay in alignment because when you're doing that, when you're actually taking time to connect with yourself and be quiet and be still, we all have that voice inside of us that is, you know, that knows what's best for us and is going to remind us when we are being dishonest that this is not who you truly are. And so when I get to a point where I'm really overstretching myself and I'm no longer making time to do yoga or to be still, and I'm just filling up my day, overstressing myself out, that to me is like big time warning bells because I'm no longer in tune with that voice. And also it's very easy for your nervous system to get dysregulated. And when you're in a very overstressed state, you lose access to the more evolved conscious part of your brain that can make decisions that are in alignment. You know, we become reactive. That's when we start, you know, being at risk for reaching for something.
So I'm there. My nervous system is completely dysregulated. We were speaking a little bit offline. You kind of know about some of the current stressors in my life. So I know that. I don't feel like I'm in danger for using. I never really feel that way anymore. But my life is like really unmanageable, right? In other ways. Well, remember the first time I interviewed you, the fucking computer wasn't plugged in. I had to run upstairs. You remember? Like, it was kind of crazy. Like, there was like multiple things I didn't have ready when we got on the interview and just like stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? So for someone like me, whose nervous system is dysregulated, how do we get back regulated? Is it the same thing, just getting in touch with our bodies, all the same things that you just said, movement, breathing, that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is just to give yourself grace. Like, you have so many balls in the air, you do so much. And like, it's like, sometimes it's like, okay, I forgot the charger, big deal. Like, yeah, I can wait for 2 minutes on the other side of the line. Cause I think honestly, sometimes that internal dialogue adds so much fuel to the fire. And it's like, we start beating ourselves up and then it just makes the whole thing worse, you know?
What I was thinking too, like in that moment when I was running around to get it, I had to leave to get something twice. I had to plug it in for the first time. And then I realized I had the wrong cube. And so it was like being weird. But anyways, my internal dialogue was, this chick as a legitimate yogi, she's obviously like super fucking serene. And she's probably like always on time. And she's going to be like, this girl is a hot mess, wasting my time. That's what I was thinking. And then especially after I spoke with you more, when we got off the interview, I was like, she probably thinks I'm out of my mind. This is like a legit peaceful yogi. Like, I'm certified to teach yoga, but I'm not like a yogi, obviously.
See, you know, I don't like this because now you're making me feel like that disconnection, because my family would be listening to this and be like, oh, really? You know?
Okay.
So I think I feel like I turn to these practices because my default setting is not calm and peaceful. And so I appreciate you saying that, but just, you know, for in spirit of transparency and being honest, like I was saying, I mean, I think the first thing is just to like give ourselves grace when we have, sometimes, you know, life is just really hard. Like, especially we were just talking about the pandemic. It's like, there's no getting around the fact that people have been through so much in the last few years. I mean, so much uncertainty, so much unpredictability, so much stress. And then it's like, you know, we're also feeding off of other people's energy. So I think for me, what have been the most helpful things are finding a way to get back into my body. So, you know, sometimes it's like just literally feeling my feet on the floor, feeling, you know, myself sitting into a seat and feeling that support. And I think also we underestimate how much a few deep breaths can do for our state in that moment, you know, just to like, cause you know, the easy reaction, it's like, oh, you realize you forgot something, to like run around. It's like, shit, you know, like then all of a sudden it's like this like really chaotic, but to just like pause and be able to take a few deep breaths in those moments, I think can make such a big difference. And with that, you know, something that I always share with people is that the reason that a daily practice is so important when it comes to mindfulness practices and yoga and meditation is because we're making that more of our default setting. Like, it's a lot harder to stop and be peaceful when you're already, you know, super triggered or you're in a really activated state. It's a lot easier, you know, I mean, it's a lot more challenging. So if you have practices that help you get there quicker. And, you know, sometimes you're not going to calm down right away. It's just that you're going to feel a little bit more capable in that moment. You know, it's like if something really challenging is going on in your life, you might not necessarily be able to calm down completely, but you can at least be a little bit more grounded and confident in your ability to respond.
So what type of yoga do you do? Like if you're doing your own practice and meditation, are you going to a class at a studio or do you do your own, like take yourself through your own routine or what do you do?
Yeah. So I like to do both. I love to go to classes. Okay. The main reason I love going to classes is because I love the group energy. Like I just like, for me, you know, I'm also someone who's fairly introverted. I can really spend a lot of time on my own. And so I think it's nice to be able to just go and be in a group class and connect with other people. And then also it's nice to just be led sometimes. But I also have, you know, my own practice that I like to do, which is just, you know, as a teacher and as someone who's been practicing for a long time, I feel like I have a strong sense of what I need in the moment. And that's what I love about yoga. It can be so individualized, not only for each person, but also like where you're at in that moment, what time of day it is, you know, what season it is. All of these different things can be taken into consideration. So yeah, I do both to answer your question.
What type of meditation do you do?
So my meditation practice is mainly just focused on the breath. It's a really simple practice. And that began for me when I was living in Cambodia. That's how it was taught at the retreat center. And so it just became, you know, my practice and something that I felt very comfortable with. And so, yeah, it's a very simple technique, but it's made the most difference for me. So I've just stuck with it. I mean, that's the thing which I feel is the most important thing that I've learned is just staying consistent with the practices and not always trying to like jump around and find the next fancy thing, you know?
What is your favorite yoga pose?
Oh gosh, that's a good question.
Or like top three?
You know, it's gone through different phases. When I was first getting sober, I was so into power vinyasa and really advanced asanas. Like I wanted to be able to do a scorpion pose and a handstand. And, you know, it's really interesting because some people say like, oh, you know, they discourage too much emphasis on the more advanced poses, which I agree with. Like yoga is not about doing handstands and getting into the most advanced pose. But when I look back on that, it's very interesting because learning how to sequence myself into these deeper poses and develop the kind of like focus and attention to detail was exactly what I needed in early sobriety to just keep me super focused on this practice that through very slow, gradual progression and commitment, I could get better at. And it wasn't going to be an instant, there wasn't going to be like an instant arrival at getting there. It was going to be very slow and I was going to need to show up and do it every day. So there was a time, yeah, but it's changed. I mean, now I'm really into a very slow practice. And a lot of times, you know, when it comes to my practice, like yoga and meditation, it's usually trying to get pretty quickly into a place of just sitting in stillness. Like I love doing other forms of exercise that are really active, like going hiking and doing like fitness classes. But when it comes to like yoga and meditation, it's slowed down so much.
So when you came back, and I started to ask you this, but so did you get, when you were looking for sober communities, did you get involved again in 12-step? Did you go back to meetings and venture into that community at all? Or where was 12-step's place in your life?
So I've always had so much respect and appreciation for the 12-steps. And I, you know, Y12SR, which is, I mentioned earlier, yoga of 12-step recovery has always resonated really strongly with me because I think there are parts of the 12-step path that I have not fully identified with. So I would say that my recovery is still like incorporates those principles, but I lean more into recovery meetings that are more centered around, you know, meditation or a little bit more holistic that bring in like some sort of physical practice and yeah, are not necessarily based around AA and the 12 steps.
Are there any type of groups like that are like online that somebody could try to find? Like, is there anything nationwide that you do that you could recommend?
Yeah. So I have within the membership that I run, I have meetings once a week through Sun and Moon Sober Living, the online community. So it's a mix. I host some of them. I have people come in. There's a woman, Maya Siemens, who's a yoga therapist and integrative Ayurvedic counselor who does some like holistic healing workshops. And so those are really great. I mean, it tends to focus on, you know, bringing in elements of like meditation and exploring boundaries and communication and rest and a lot of the stuff that can be really effective for supporting people through recovery. And again, I mean, there's so much overlap between the 12 steps. So like, I think my aim with that is really to just create options for people who might not ever find themselves in the rooms, but can still benefit from having a community of people who are sober or sober curious.
Is your initial vision of your sober living, has it grown and evolved over time? Like, what's that journey been like? Like, what did you initially picture and where is it now? Like, what's the evolution been? Because you've had it for a few years now.
Yeah, it's about 2 years now. And I feel like it's important to emphasize that it's not a sober living house. The idea is more it's about the concept of living sober, so sober living. But it started off as really just sharing information organically through social media and, you know, sharing resources, sharing tools. And from there, it evolved into hosting online meetings. And so it was just bringing people together over Zoom. The podcast came after that. I did my first retreat in partnership with Deb Massner, who's a coach as well. And so it was a group of sober women. We went to Taos, New Mexico. So it's definitely evolved, but it was something that's been brewing in me for honestly, probably since after the first couple of years that I got sober, when I wasn't even open about my sobriety yet, like I had this really strong urge to help other people in recovery and to just remove some of the stigma and be more open about my own journey with it. But it's taken a long time to get there. And so I feel like at the point that I actually started, you know, sharing and opening up about it and putting resources out there, I was just like overflowing with things that I wanted to put out there. So yeah. And now it's become a lot more collaborative in the sense that, you know, it's not just me hosting meetings, it's other people coming in, doing workshops. We always have a book club. So we're always like bringing in the work of everything from psychologists to meditation teachers to more like memoir style books. So.
Oh, that's so cool. And is it like a monthly membership? Is that kind of how it works?
It is. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Oh, that's so cool. I love that idea.
Yeah.
So movement is obviously integral to your recovery and your life. It sounds like it is with mine as well. A lot of people listening, they hear me say this. And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I should work out. I understand. But they'll DM me and they're like, I don't really know how to get started. Like, you know, I don't know what to do. Cause you are like, you're actually talking to someone listening right now who is like, yeah, I get it. That yoga would be like good for me. Of course, I've heard this. What would you say to them to how to get started? And how would you motivate someone into trying something for the first time? Like they're in sober living, they recently got clean, maybe they're not feeling super strong. How do you motivate them to even try? What would you say?
Well, I think a starting point, this was the case for me. It's been the case for a lot of women that I've spoken to. I'm sure men too. I think a lot of us have this association with exercise and like fixing ourselves physically or something that is very physical. And that seems to be the primary association with it. So I had to do a lot of unlearning around that and I even tend to use the word movement because it's like exercise can bring up this idea of like, I've got to get super motivated. It's going to be really hard, like, you know, got to get to the gym, find the class. And it's just that word can be really loaded for people who don't have, if exercise is not part of your life. Now, if it already is, you might actually have an association that's like, oh yeah, you know, like you get excited, you already start to feel the exercise high that's coming. But if you are like that, and you're someone who it hasn't been a part of your life, I mean, for me, it's giving myself permission to just do it in very small doses, like find a style of movement that feels good. In my case, it was yoga. Remove any sort of like expectation of the outcome or the big transformation or whatever that is. And just think of it as an opportunity to come back into connection with your body, with your breath, with your mind. Because I think of addiction, I mean, addiction is a state of disconnection. We're completely disconnected from our body, from our, you know, emotions, from, you know, that like truest form of ourself, which we spoke about. And so if you can just think about it as a way, as a tool that's bringing you back into a state of connection, dance in your room, go for a walk, like do whatever you need to do to literally, and take it as slow as you need to so that you can actually just move from that place of disconnection to connection. So I always encourage people to just get curious and explore different ways of moving your body. You know, yoga, for example, we tend to put it in this category of yoga as one thing, there are so many different styles of yoga that you can explore. It's unbelievable. And so I would say just get curious and then have a very clear plan. You know, as with putting any new habit into place, it's like make it small and have a very detailed plan of where that habit is going to fit into your day. And there are some great practices that you can use. Like I love the book Atomic Habits by James Clear. I recommend it for everyone who's trying to make some sort of behavior change. Exactly. So it's like, when are you going to place that into your day and have a detailed plan for doing it? But I think the biggest thing is like just make it start very small and keep it consistent. So if it's 1 minute of movement a day and that's realistically all you know you're going to do, then do that and celebrate yourself for doing it. Like don't get down on yourself or minimize that. Just, you know, allow that to slowly accumulate.
I think that's a great answer. I'm going to like have that probably be the clip and then just like repost it on my Instagram all the time. Cause that's a question that I get a lot, right? Like from people that are still using, it's how do I detox? But for and women a lot as well that are newly sober, it's like, I want to get moving. I hear you. I see you. I get that it's cool, but like, I'm scared. I don't know how to get started. And I love that idea. Not the loaded word of like fitness and exercise, but just some sort of like, because that's what I did too, right? Like even though I am in fitness, I was beat to shit when I was landing in detoxes. And so like what I would do is after, I mean, depending on how bad it was, when I could, I would maybe, if I was locked in a detox, I would do some yoga movements like, you know, warrior one, down dog, you know what I mean? Like just like a little baby flow for like 10 minutes, you know, I would do something like that. And then I would just slowly start to, if I was free, I would do like walk around the block. You know, if I was somewhere where I was allowed to leave, like I would walk around the block. And that's me. I used to teach spin and I would still start in increments like that, you know, trying to get my breath back up so that I could, you know, do more. Cause I had to start there, you know, I could barely breathe. Like the last time I was detoxing, I was at my friend's house and he was at work and I wanted to go get his mail. Like that was all I could, I had nothing to give, but I was like, I could at least go get his mail. And I could barely even get to the mailbox, you know? And it's like, and now I teach spin and can teach multiple classes in a row. Like the human body I found is remarkably good at regenerating and restoring ourselves to our original state. When I did my step two, this was like life-changing for me. My sponsorship tree, when we do step two, we define the word restore. And I remember one of the definitions that I came across was to return to its original state. And I thought, oh, can I? Because like my original state was good, man. Like I wasn't a piece of shit when I was one. I was cute, you know, like my original state. I just, something about that was so powerful to me. Like I was like, if there's a chance that I can restore this, you know, that was very like inspiring and motivational for me, you know, the idea of like coming back to an original state.
Yeah, I love that. And I really think there's something to be said too about rebuilding this trust with your body, because sometimes it's like, we're like, oh, I can't go to yoga because the class doesn't work with my schedule and I'm going to have to get there and all these, you know, all these different things getting in our way, that we forget that, you know, if you watch an animal like a dog or a cat, they'll just stretch and they'll move their body and they'll, you know, and there's all these actual really interesting studies about animals in the wild and how they, you know, react to traumatic situations and release that. But we have that intelligence. Like our body knows how to move in a way that is going to, you know, release tension and all of these different things. And I think sometimes we become so disconnected that we don't even trust ourselves to just do 10 minutes of stretching in our room because we say, oh, I don't know how. Like, I don't know how to do yoga. It's like, well, that's part of the process, I think, is just finding ways to come back into your body. And yeah, I mean, you could say that you're going back to your original state. I think a lot of people end up actually finding themselves in a much better position than where they started. Like, I had this realization the other day when I pulled up in the parking lot, because now I love hiking and I live in Colorado. When I went to school here and I was drinking and using drugs, I went on one hike in 4 years and I thought it was the hardest thing of my life. And I just had this realization. I'm like, oh my God, like I'm someone who goes on hikes for fun. Like, when did this happen? I would have never in my life, I was someone who despised exercise. It was just a way to fix my body, which I was always unhappy with. And so to me, it was like, I would never think of that as something fun. It was a way to beat myself up. It was a very negative experience. And so it just made me realize, and you know, that just happened through very small, like incrementally building up and learning to love movement and not, you know, forcing myself to do something because I have to, but starting to realize in recovery, like, wow, movement is actually having a really positive effect on my mental health. This is making me feel more confident when I walk out of the yoga studio or when I finish my practice. I feel like I can take on the day. I feel like I can do this. And so, yeah, I think that giving ourselves the time for that to happen, but there really are so many benefits.
I love that idea that we can return not just to an original state, but a better place. Like that's something that I say sometimes. We don't have the ability to just bounce back. We can bounce forward, right? We can get like further ahead than where we were prior to our addiction, which is one of the reasons why I know my audience has heard me say it a million times, super grateful for all of this, all of the shit. I'm so glad that I ended up being a heroin addict because it made me such I like this version of me now, and I don't think I would have gotten to this version of me without the addiction, right? I think I would have stayed the version of me before. Do you feel grateful for your journey into coke use and alcoholism? Is it something that's left you better, do you feel? Or would you say that's not really the case?
100%. And I love that you say that. Like thinking back on the conversation that we had on my podcast, just hearing you share everything you had been through and the fact that you wouldn't change any of it and you have so much gratitude for that. It's so powerful. And I completely agree because, and I tell people this, like if I had a quote unquote normal relationship with alcohol or substances, or I was able to moderate, I would probably have stayed in this career, this corporate career in Chicago, working in a cubicle, just going through the motions, this path just kind of that I fell into without really ever taking the opportunity to say like, what do I really want from my life? I would have just been subtly, you know, a little bit numbed out, a little dulled out from that, never really had any real motivation or reason because from the outside, it's like things are looking great, you know? And so what came of my life is something I never would have expected. I never in my wildest dreams would have thought that I would be living in Southeast Asia. I mean, there were times that when I first was in that retreat center in Cambodia or when I'm like hiking in Nepal, and I would just be like, how did I end up here? Like, what happened? What were the series of events? And it was my addiction.
And it was like a direct result of your addiction.
It was my addiction.
I mean,
you know, that's why I ultimately was like, I have to share. It's like that whole thing about honesty. I was like, I have to share this part of my story because people would ask that. They were like, how the hell did you end up living in Southeast Asia? You're like this girl working at an advertising agency in Chicago. And again, it's like that idea of wanting to be honest, but I had so much shame still. So I never shared that until years later, but that was it. I was there because I had a serious bottom in my life that was enough of a bottom for me where I had to make a change. And then that's what, you know, led me in that direction, but I wouldn't change it for the world. And on top of that, it's not just the experiences that I've got to have, but it's the level of connection that you can form with other people. Like it was so exhausting. You know, I look back at the way I was when I was in college and my teenage years, and I think this is really common that a lot of us go through, but just so much insecurity, so much having to like hide parts of myself that I didn't want to be seen. And so one of the greatest gifts of recovery has just been able to connect with people who are willing to own all parts of themselves. And I'll say like, I'm still a major work in progress. Like I, you know, but that to me is, yeah, I could talk about the gifts all day.
Right. Yeah. I know, again, this is something I've said before, like we're the lucky ones, right? I think we are gifted this beautiful life of clarity and alignment and connection. And like you said, same thing with me. I think I would have just finished GW, gone to law school. I've asked my mom this multiple times, who knows me so well. And she's like, yeah, you were like really good at debate and you would have been a good lawyer, but you weren't happy. You didn't really enjoy it. But I'm sure I would have just said, you know, I got a 401k and a health insurance. And although actually the value of health insurance was very lost on me until I was an adult. So that I might not have checked that off, but like, you know, money and a homeowner and just kind of like floated through that aspect, like a little bit numbed out, never really with the opportunity to figure out like, who am I really, right? Like, what was my spirit sent here to do? Because I believe that we were sent here to do something. And I don't think that I ever would have uncovered, you know, that purpose. So where can everybody connect with you and find you?
Yeah. So a great way to connect is Instagram at sunandmoon.soberliving. I try to share fairly frequently on there. I also have a podcast, the Sun and Moon Sober Living Podcast, which have a great interview with you on there, and my website. And so it's just sunandmoonsoberliving.com. So yeah, if anybody does want to connect and be part of the community, I always say, and I feel like I should have made this clear when I was sharing before, like I'm a huge advocate for 12-step recovery and AA. That was a huge, huge part of my journey. So I'm never trying to share that as any sort of like replacement. But if you're interested in exploring other tools that might be able to add to your recovery toolbox, so to speak. Yeah, I love being able to, because for me, like so much of my own recovery was just trying different things on and seeing what else I could incorporate. And so just to be able to have a space to kind of share that with other people is really the intention behind that.
Well, I cannot thank you enough for your time spread out over multiple days. So you guys, we've been interviewing each other for 4 days to get two interviews if you stack it all up, because we just kept like talking and talking and talking. So I appreciate your time so much. Like, I know that people are going to get so much out of everything that you've said and the way that you so eloquently word the benefits of movement to recovery and the human spirit and finding alignment. Like, you're very good at this and you just make it seem like super appealing and super inviting. And so I'm sure some people are going to go check you out further. And I'm just so glad that we were able to connect.
Oh, thank you. And same to you. I find it hilarious because we chat so much that, yeah, we've literally been doing this for days and days.
For 4 days. for days and days and days. Yeah, over like 6 weeks or whatever. I don't even remember when was the first time we did like our, supposed to be our, you know, like ended up being our part one for the first one, you know, of like 3 or 4 weeks ago. But yeah, so anyways, just I thank you so, so much for your time.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm so grateful that we're connected.